Good morning. Today is Wednesday, August the 4th. Joining us this morning from the Redwood Coast Energy Authority, Mike Avalay. No, wait a minute. Av Cawley.
Perfect.
If I could just kind of get my glasses lined up here and have half a chance. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Well, it's summer. I'm overheating all the time. But that's kind of like a bad pun for you, and gives you the opportunity to talk about that after we ask you our question here. So let's see if we can find a short one so I don't get too lost here. All right. Why is a sports enthusiast called a fan?
They're fanatical.
Fan is an abbreviation for fanatic. Towards the turn of the century, the media referred to football enthusiasts. First as the football fanatics, and then later as football fans. And it went from there. I know baseball early on, they had all kinds of names for them. So for folks that are unfamiliar, Mike, what is RCEA? I mean, it's one of those letters that you hear kicking around a little bit. Kind of sounds like RCAA, but it's not.
Yep.
And it's certainly not PG&E.
Correct.
But you guys kind of are sort of related. It, you know, maybe like kissing cousins or something like that. So what is RCEA?
So Redwood Coast Energy Authority is a joint powers agency of the seven cities, the county, and the Humboldt Bay Municipal Water District. We provide power to you via our community choice aggregation. So we buy and sell the power that runs on PG&E's power lines. So we've been a joint powers agency since 2003, working in the energy field, bringing energy conservation and efficiency measures to our community. And since 2017, we've been a community choice aggregator. And that's when we, since then we've been.
That's when things kind of got formalized.
We've been formalized the whole time, but we became a bigger agency when we took on the power sales and power procurement for about 90. A little over 90% of Humboldt County's electric customers are with RCEA. And it definitely expanded our activities and our reach in the community.
Your footprint.
Also,
I would imagine.
Yeah.
Now, so what is the relationship between, is Fairhaven still working, aren't they?
Fairhaven is having some trouble staying up and down, so yeah. I believe that they are considering a transfer of ownership, selling their facility to a new owner is where
right.
I believe.
And that's right not now. You guys.
That's not going to be us. No, we do buy power, or we have in the past. When they were up and running, we had a contract to buy their power. We'll have to, I believe, renegotiate that if and when there's a new owner.
I understand that. So how did the water district get involved?
The Water District is just one of our member agencies. Like I said, we're a joint powers agency. So, the Water District themselves or any one of the cities might not have the bandwidth to have energy specialists and energy analysts on their staff, kind of like the way Humboldt Transit Authority is a, countywide authority that serves many different entities. We, Humboldt Bay Municipal Water District has, they're a big power user. They pump a lot of water, so I think
that's what I was saying. Maybe they're just because of their status of being a major player.
Exactly, that's a great way to describe them. Yeah.
So for regular folks, what is it that you do? Are you like an advocacy group for us? Are you an insurance policy for us? What function? Regular guy, normal. What do you do?
The easiest way I can say it is we buy power on the wholesale market on behalf of 93% of the customers in Humboldt County.
So from the PG&Es and the Fairhavens and the guys that got the solar panels on their roof that have access, that kind of stuff?
Yes, those are some of the contracts, but not PG&E. PG&E, there's a distinction now. PG&E will still provide, they're our partner, they provide your transmission and distribution services, and for an average person, I would say they own the poles and the wires that the electricity runs on, but we buy and sell the contracts and that power, the electrons that run across those wires, into each of our homes, now is being provided by RCEA, and so we have to buy long-term power contracts, we have to have the security and the ability to
So are you guys like buying from like Bonneville and people like that?
We have a mix that, includes some of the local biomass power plants. It includes large hydro from the Northwest. We recently bought into a large 100 megawatt Sandrini Solar Farm in Southern California. So some of it is within state, some of it comes from out of state. We'll buy a mix of wind and other renewable products.
Now, let's see, how do I say this one without having you run away? There are foundations, investment groups, things of this nature that say, okay, we want to emphasize in this area or in that area, or conversely, we don't want anything from those guys or anything dealing with, you mentioned solar, wind, mm-hmm. hydro, some of these that have higher costs.
Mm-hmm.
Is that then mitigated by other purchases, or is that part of your directive, is that we want to support these various forms of energy in addition to the traditional ones? So let's be sure that we purchase X percent from renewable sources.
It is both of those things. So we have increased standards for our renewable portfolio, higher. We like to keep our standards higher than your alternative, which would be to get your power from PG&E, right? So the alternative is PG&E. We're a little bit greener and we're a little cheaper. So while some sources of energy may be more expensive, by buying long-term contracts, we want to do a good job at what we do. And so we're not a lot, but a little bit cheaper than PG&E.
But you're able to negotiate them down then because of the length of the contract.
Yeah, that exactly.
Volume, so to speak.
Yeah. Yes.
Now, it almost sounds like it's an energy co-op, but it really must have some distinctions that are separate from that. I mean, typically a JPA is, okay, you got the governmentals and everybody wants to be able to tell you what to do, so they've got their rep on there and their backups, and they go, this is what we want, by golly, and you have the battles. How is that distinct from having a board of directors and just being in an energy co-op that is in the procurement and the resale business?
So I think that it just makes us a government agency. That's the difference between us and a co-op, is that we actually...
You said that without apology.
Yeah, exactly. No. So the members of our board are from elected government bodies. So our board is elected and we're open to the public. We take public input, and you know, they're on your city council, they're on your board of supervisors, they're on the water board's board of directors. And so...
Accountability perhaps.
Through that, yeah.
KINS, News and Information Time is 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbara Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long, on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Mike Avcolli from RCEA. Mike, the energy arena, is fairly fluid right now. I mean, you've got some government subsidies that are there, some that are being pulled off, some mandated this, some mandated that. We want this, we don't want that. And then let's change an administration. I'm thinking like at the state level, well, okay, now all of a sudden this is okay where before it wasn't. Does that make the energy acquisition process far more complicated than it needs to be? Or do you get some cover because everybody's going through all that stuff all over the place, and it's not just RCEA that's challenged with it. It's kind of anybody who's buying energy.
I think it's more the latter. It's anybody's going to be affected by this. And, you know, if you think of the alternative of an unregulated market, then I think we've seen some of what unregulated markets do, whether that's in 2001 in California, you know, through Enron gaming the system and charging high energy prices, or the massive failures of the Texas energy system. So, yes, there are a lot more regulations.
Those are stock owner driven. Or wrong. The desire to have high returns for the shareholders.
That's a good way to say it.
That's what their standard was, rather than you guys, that really isn't there. I mean, you want to deliver for the customers, but you only have one customer base you're dealing with, not two or three.
I think that's exactly right. Yeah. And for all the regulations at the state level, everybody does deal with them. Like you said earlier, it's not just our CEA. We have an independent system operator. The California independent system operator sets a lot of rules. It may make things more complicated, but maybe I wouldn't go so far as to say too complicated. I think it... for somebody
not
like
yet,
me, I have
maybe.
A job.
Not
it's
yet.
Just the right amount of complicated, right? I got job security.
So it's energy, I would think, as the EPA is involved, as CEQA is more and more aggressive, everybody seems to be growing their fangs and growing their claws right now. It's not going to become less regulated in the future. Is it going to be easier, though, to procure power and energy? Because there may be less players, and you know the players a little bit better who are there and know their personalities and understand what their pricing structures are and how much they can provide? Or is it better off now having, from here to there, all kinds of options, and maybe some guys can do big chunks of power and other guys do small chunks, but you're able to kind of work that portfolio so that you get really a different mix?
I think that's the benefit of our CEA is that we can work our portfolio to meet our region's needs and both meet, the wants of our community as expressed through our board and that public process I mentioned earlier, right, and not have a one-size-fits-all. We're not a lot like the rest of the state, not in climate. Our energy use, the statewide peaks, summer heating and air conditioning loads aren't our big concern.
Yeah.
So maybe it's good that we have
more local control.
You
were luxuriating here in one of, what, about 10 air conditioning systems in the county?
Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
Loving it on it. 70 degrees in on the coast.
Yeah.
Loving it.
Yeah. So what are some of those wants that are expressed by the board to tell you, okay, we want to support this or we don't want to support that? Is it that black and white or is it more nuances?
I mean, there are things that are black and white, and I could probably say them in three or four. I'll count on my fingers. But more local control, lower prices, and more renewable energy. Those are the big directives from our board. Everything we do is focused on those things. Stand a little bit cheaper than PG&E. That's hard work. Having local control, we talked about that. More renewables, we also talked about that. We always do a little bit better than what the state mandates. And that's keeping us ahead of what is going to be a stricter mandate every year. Mandate meaning a requirement to buy renewable power.
So does the state has that, or the state
yes.
has that in order for you to maintain your status either as a JPA or as an entity?
No, the state has a minimum standard that all energy providers, PG&E, us, big guys, little guys, corporations, community choice aggregators, we all have to meet a minimum renewable portfolio standard that the state sets.
A percentage of the juice that's passed
yep.
through?
Yep.
What is it?
Ish. 36 or 38% is the state level.
Oh,
and
really?
I believe our CEA's standard mix meets 44% or 46%.
That's a big chunk.
Yeah, yes. That is the benefit of our CEA right now is a little bit more of that, staying ahead of that curve, staying ahead of that state mandate and saying we're doing a little better than what's required of us.
Are there more and more providers of renewable, or is the competition getting more and more to purchase the existing and so the price kind of walks up the...
There are more providers. First question, yes, there are more providers. More companies are developing solar farms. We have some here that are within county.
Out at the airport?
Out at the airport. No, actually, more like the one in Blue Lake. There's going to be
some
place out in Hatchery Road. And, you may have heard talk about offshore wind at some point. That will become a new resource and more producers.
But they're not strapping solar panels on the blades, are they?
No, they're not.
Okay.
No, they're not. They haven't tried that yet. We'll squeeze
more
energy.
Wasn't sure how far
somehow.
Out Mike was going to go on that one.
Yeah. But there are more. There's more pressure on certain. As more people need to buy renewable power, there are more pressure on those products as well.
So as the county is currently constituted, okay, you get a pretty good handle on it. Now we've got Humboldt going with a polytech, and I mean, some of the numbers that are getting thrown around are, for those of us that are pro-development, are kind of encouraging. Okay, how do you plan out? Okay, if you needed to generate another or purchase another 10 or 15% energy, could you? Can you move that quick to be able to get that with the contracts?
I mean, that's harder to answer. I think that there is some long-term development that needs to happen. You know, we look at port development as a supporting activity that has to happen. If and when all that wind comes online, we'll have to find a way to get rid of it. It'll be more than we need here.
Wouldn't that be a good spot to be in? It's 8:30.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Mike Avcolli from RCEA. You guys are out of Eureka, right?
Yeah.
Down in Old Town?
Yep, 3rd Street in Old Town in Eureka.
Can I say the old Winslow & Kelly office?
That's what a lot of people say.
Good, okay.
You're not the only one.
No, age has got to count for something.
Yeah.
What is the biggest challenge that's out there right now, Mike, in the energy arena? Is it cost? Is it regulation? Is it the delivery of the product? Political pressures? What is out there?
I mean, I would say political will is one of the biggest problems. There are a lot of technological solutions. There are a lot of good things we could be doing. And political will allow us to make more of those things happen. So I think that is a big part of it. There are other challenges in terms of shifting infrastructure to support these things. So I would like to say we should all drive electric cars, but then we all need electric car chargers, and we need them to be as easy to use as gas stations.
And not everybody who just bought a rig can buy a new rig.
And that too, economic problems.
I mean,
yeah. Economic pressures that can't, you know, don't.
And then the collectibles.
The collectibles?
Yeah, I mean, if you're driving, let's say, a 64 Mustang,
yeah.
You can give me an electric, and I'm just going to run it over.
Yeah.
There's zero interest there, right?
Yeah.
So you've got that element.
Sure, consumer desire.
It'll shrink the market. You know, that percentage of the market will be more and more of a minority position.
Yeah.
That will make sense.
Another problem with renewables is intermittency, right? So the wind doesn't blow all the time. The sun doesn't shine all the time. To overcome, you know, needing fossil fuels as an alternative, that's a challenge as well, right? So people look at battery energy storage systems, other storage systems, pumped hydro or flywheels. Any way to store that energy, and our airport microgrid's a good example. We got a big old battery up there to go with that large solar array, and that can then back up the airport. It can back up the Coast Guard facilities if and when needed. And so tackling that, what I would call the intermittency problem, or the sun doesn't always shine problem, that's out there.
Humboldt
for
County
renewables.
Fog.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, what you mentioned batteries a couple of times, and that's one of the things that I've had a number of folks who I would say are working familiar.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Is okay. So when this stuff is left over, you're going to have this battery that nobody wants. Okay. Certainly not in their landfill, but even the reutilization of it or breaking down mm-hmm. any of the components mm-hmm. or. Now multiply that by a couple hundred thousand a year.
Yeah.
And, okay, unless you want a new mountain range right now, it's kind of a head-scratcher.
Yeah.
Is that a concern? You know, either renewables as they expire or need to be maintained,
mm-hmm.
Or batteries mm-hmm. as they wear out, or the technologies as they improve.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
it's not as small as an old cell phone was.
Yeah.
To be able to get rid of. I mean, is some of those are those also concerns as part of the energy landscape?
Absolutely. Those are very legitimate concerns. I was in a statewide webinar yesterday about that topic. It's a huge concern. First generation windmills and the turbine blades also have an issue with that. So I wouldn't want to say these are easy solutions. And you know, so if renewables are a solution, they come with other problems that will be created and that will have to be addressed. We can't just blindly advocate for that new technology without asking the question you asked. Today, batteries are hard to recycle or remove, like you described. And we know that for the solar industry, it took some time, and that's just happening now where they're no longer toxic waste.
That's what I was wondering, with the solar panels, you know, has that been overcome? Because that's been, Grandpa put some on his house in the 80s. The old, not attached to the roof, kind of tilted up stuff.
Yep.
So obviously it's a couple generations advanced at least since then. But some of that, I would think, is if it's not being recognized now by the manufacturers of this stuff, of the energy, as a consumer, it certainly is going to come up and pop them in the chops in the next 5 or 6 years as these things start to rotate out.
And I would say that was one of the topics of this discussion I attended, was first generation solar being at its end of useful life, and that's Grandpa's solar is at end of useful life now. So they're just getting to find a way to take them apart and reuse them now. I would say that's not easy or possible to do just for everyone.
Are they breaking it down and reutilizing, or is it kind of like the wood pallets where, let's stick these things on the wall and look, they're decor?
Well, no, absolutely. For now, California calls them toxic waste, and you can't take them apart in state. They go out of state where someone else will.
Wait a minute. Whoa. But now, California has been pushing all this thing and trying to be this greeny. Now they're not there for the entire process?
So they're, I would say, according
to... surprising, but yeah, it just it, is
it's
still
a challenge.
Hubris.
No, yeah. No. So needing to overcome that and get those laws to where they become just, there's a term for it, but more similar to a standard electronic waste, to where they can be dismantled and reused.
Well, I heard something last week that was talking about the fiberglass being able to be extracted. Somebody somewhere had figured out some way to do something, and that they were beginning to acquire these blades. And I guess there's a ton of them, whether it's from Wyoming or Southern California out in the desert or wherever it's coming from, and nobody wants them. I mean, it's like free. Mm-hmm. You can figure out what to do with these things and turn something. It's free. You don't have to worry about it. And that there was something that was kind of like on the horizon out there that somebody was looking at that might actually be able to utilize part of these pieces of gear. Maybe not the batteries, but the blades themselves.
Yeah. Well, I would hope that vehicle manufacturers will take an interest in this. And the concept that the original manufacturers have a lot at stake to on the front end of the sale, right? They should keep some responsibility at the back end. And so the original manufacturers, whether they support or develop recycling, programs, is considered one of the solutions.
Of course, that's kind of tough. It's kind of like having the beer guys be responsible for the aluminum futures markets.
It's true. Yeah. I mean, these are challenges.
You think your life's rough now?
Yeah.
Stay tuned. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:43.
Hey folks, flying local is buying local. And with 3 airlines serving 5 destinations, Humboldt County has more choices than ever. Fly on American, Avelo, or United Airlines. We have service to Denver, Hollywood Burbank, LAX, Phoenix, and San Francisco airports. Now's the time to book and save on that getaway. Or have friends and family fly to visit the beautiful Redwood Coast. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org. Fly Humboldt, more flights to more destinations.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It is 8:46. We're back talking shop with Mike Avcolli from RCEA. Mike, what are some of the new technologies that are kind of out there that maybe we don't know too much about them now, but they could be mainstreaming within 10 years that are either energy efficient, more efficient in delivering the energy. Technologies that are kind of like cutting edge that we would go, huh? Like, you know, having your radio inside a refrigerator, or your refrigerator being able to be a radio for you. Mm-hmm. Okay, or the TVs that pay attention to what your websites are that you go to on your phone, and those are the commercials you get when you're watching whatever video you choose. I mean, there's some of that stuff that's Jetson-like.
Yeah, yeah.
What's got you really pumped?
Well, I mean, you know, we mentioned everything's got its trade-offs, right? But one of the things we're seeing in the future is demand response mechanisms. Responsive loads are things that can be turned on and off remotely. Maybe this is a car charger. Like if you have an electric vehicle and you have your car charger, if you have a smart one that can be wired and through an internet portal controlled, you can see a lot of benefits to, say, supporting the grid. And, you know, in California, we have a lot of stressed out days on our grid. When it gets really hot, it's hard to provide power. It becomes really expensive. We have rolling blackouts. And so we as energy users could have a little power in this if we could all ramp our power down when we needed to. But not just me flickering my lights at home. It's not that effective. But, you know, you get these responsive loads. A smart appliance can do this. It could be a turning down 1,000 water heaters by 2 degrees to get that kind of response. And so having the ability to kind of aggregate appliances through, smart devices, aggregate them and have them act so kind of a little bit maybe like a hive mentality. So where all of our cars stop charging or slow down the charge at once in response to what could be otherwise a blackout. That kind of, you know, responsiveness, that power can start to be, signals can go both ways. It's not just a one-way avenue anymore where they push power from the power plant to our house. It's a little more nuanced than that, a little more responsive if you start weaving in people's, if they have solar, if they have a storage device, if their car with a battery is their storage device. In the future, I do think all of those things can be kind of interwoven and controlled in a way that really does provide more control, fine-tuning of your system. Now, maybe one of those things you've heard about is, oh, it's so cool, I can turn the heat down in my house from my phone, right? Like you have a thermostat that could do that today. And that's pretty cool. Again, me by myself with my phone turning on and off my heat. If we could do that as a society in a way that like made a difference, and we could build one less power plant those things. And simple. You said the future. You gave me 10 years.
Yeah, I know.
Right?
Yeah.
That's all I need is 10 years.
Yeah, I'm still trying to remember passwords on how to get on my phone.
Well, I did not say simple for
now, the record. What about the internet itself? I mean, we have issues here on the North Coast. I'm thinking of emergency situations. Not here in tidal waves or earthquakes, but Midwest with tornadoes and hurricanes and. Okay, if things are down, if towers are bent, okay, now there's no internet. Now everything's smart. All of a sudden, we're all pretty dumb very quickly. I mean, is there a redundant delivery concept, or are we talking about the satellites that are going to be delivering and accessed not through power poles and utility lines, but I guess from the sky?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a complication. Some of what I was talking about just recently, I think, you know, they would go into a default mode when the grid goes down, and you wouldn't have your cool responsive grid anymore.
Like when we have outages today. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I think it would be probably like that. I think there's some of what you're talking about, this ability to acquire a signal and, you know, use a GPS signal, but that's not my area. You know, communications are definitely not my area of expertise.
You're a guy. Of course not. All right. It was a heck of a line for half of the audience. If somebody wants to follow this stuff or is intrigued by it or has no knowledge of it, but wants to, what does the future have? What are the electronics? What are some of the appliances? Are there some websites or places you can go, not to buy stuff, but the beta testing and some of the thoughts, kind of like what Scientific Atlanta used to be, or, you know, in the old days, you know, where you could see things that weren't out on the market, but it was like, oh, that's cool, and you'd see it 15 years down the road?
Excellent question. Not going to give you an excellent answer. I mean, I would encourage you to go to redwoodenergy.org. That's our website. You can learn about a lot of programs that I think are new and exciting. But in terms of checking out products, I probably don't have a good recommendation for that.
Or maybe, you know, go to Vegas.
They do trade shows. They do trade shows. Even the solar industry does a trade show.
I've only been there, have had two buddies who go there, and they just say, yeah, it's overwhelming.
Yeah.
A lot of the cool stuff. Hey, thanks for coming by. It was fun.
Thanks, Brian.
See everybody tomorrow.